and overseeing all the pastimes in Vrindavan and protecting Vrindavan in all ways. So Kamsa was no match for Purnamasi. So Purnamasi told him, "You want to enter Vrindavan, do you? You want to meet Krishna, do you? Well, we'll have to train you up first." So Purnamasi changed Kamsa into the form of a little girl and said, "All right, first lesson. First lesson is, you see these cows. What you do is, you walk just behind the cows. And as soon as they pass cow dung, you run and grab it. If you can grab it before it touches the ground, that's best. But at least while it's still steaming." There's a science to cow dung utilization. And Kamsa, being a king and being a demon and so on, he was not attracted to that. But Purnamasi, she would not take any back talk. So she told Kamsa, "You do this." So Kamsa, he had to do it. He was wandering around, following the cows with Purnamasi behind him, picking up the cow dung and really not appreciating it at all. Yes. But that is what goes on, actually. That's what goes on. They go out and collect the cow dung. And they live simple life. Of course, there is opulence. I mean, they use these Chintamani stones for different things. One use, there's a description somewhere. I forget where it is, but there's a description somewhere that the gopis use Chintamani stones as anklets. They use Chintamani stones. What they do, they make sandals where there's the bottom where your foot goes on, and then there's a thong which goes up between your big toe and the next toe, and then on top there's something to hold it there. So they use the Chintamani stones for that. Now, we might think of using a Chintamani stone. Well, you know the story about Sanatan Goswami. Srila Prabhupada actually told the story of Sanatan Goswami, who found a touchstone and threw it in the rubbish heap. And there was one Shivite who somehow or other, perhaps Lord Shiva told him. Anyway, somehow or other he found out that this Sanatan Goswami has a touchstone in Vrindavan. So that Shivite went to Sanatan Goswami and, you know, expecting, sort of like hoping against hope, thinking, who would give away a touchstone if he had one? But anyway, hoping against hope that Sanatan Goswami might, he said, "I hear you have a touchstone." Sanatan Goswami said, "Yes." And the man said, "Well, could I have it?" And Sanatan Goswami said, "Sure. It's back there in the rubbish heap." So the man dug it out. And he was busy touching it to everything. And everything was turning to gold. And he was thinking, "This is truly my ultimate lucky day." But then he thought that, why was this man keeping this exceedingly valuable thing in the rubbish heap? He must have something more valuable. So he went back, and Sanatan Goswami said, "Yes, of course. It's rubbish. It's useless, that. I've got no need for it. I've got something much more valuable." So the man begged him, "Please give me that." And Sanatan Goswami said, "Sure, but you throw away the touchstone." That was a struggle. But the man threw it away and he got the Hare Krishna mantra. Yeah.
was a struggle, but the man threw it away and he got the Hare Krishna mantra. Yeah. What is it? Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purana Shudo Nitya Mukto Binatvam Nama Namino. The holy name is so much more valuable. The inhabitants of Vrindavan also, they sometimes use the big touchstones to hold open the door, like as a doorstop, because they're always looking out. When's Krishna coming home? When's Krishna coming home? So to keep the door open, they put a big Chintamani rock there. Yeah, because their desire is to see Krishna. If you ever go up the Gandaki, I've never been there, but one devotee who's been up several times told me, the people use shalagram shilas to hold open the doors. Like big shalagram shilas like this. Yeah. Anyway. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan. You know, there's a description in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's in the Madhya Leela somewhere. Actually, I forget exactly. Somewhere in the Madhya Leela. There's the description of the Hera Panchami festival. I don't know if you've read about that. But it's part of the Jagannath Rath Yatra festival. The Jagannath Rath Yatra festival is not just that you pull the chariot down the street and, you know, that's that. It goes on for days, and there are different events that take place. So on the fifth day, I think, Panchami at least means fifth day, so on one of the days, I think it's the fifth day, after the initial Rath Yatra, when Lord Jagannath, when the Jagannath deities are in Gundicha, which is Vrindavan, having left the Jagannath temple, which is Dwaraka, and Jagannath is enjoying his pastimes there with Srimati Radharani in Gundicha in Vrindavan. Then on that day, the goddess of fortune comes with all her maidservants to attack Lord Jagannath and his servants. Because the pastime is that when Lord Jagannath goes on the Rath Yatra, he tells the goddess of fortune, of course, doesn't want to lose his association. So he tells her, don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow or the next day. But then he doesn't come back because he gets all involved there in Vrindavan. So the goddess of fortune comes in a very angry mood. So they have, you know, even today, as far as I know, and definitely in Lord Chaitanya's time, they have devotees who dress up as the goddess of fortune and her servants and maidservants, whole entourage, and they come with sticks and weapons, and they attack the Gundicha temple, and they attack the servants of Lord Jagannath, and they beat them up and arrest them all. And then the goddess of fortune chastises Lord Jagannath. And the servants of Lord Jagannath very humbly submit themselves and say, don't worry, we'll bring him back tomorrow. I don't think he comes back tomorrow. But I think it's on the eighth day or so they have the return Rath Yatra, something like that, a few days later. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's this nice discussion of how Lord Chaitanya and his associates are watching the Hera Panchami festival. And here comes the goddess of fortune on, you know, in a very kind of opulent way. Some big palanquin, many servants fanning her, and, you know, very, very opulent and, you know, like extravagant type of decoration, the goddess of fortune. And then there's the associates of Lord Jagannath. They're now in the Vrindavan mood. So they're very simple. They're just dressed in simple clothes and they get overpowered. So Shivas Thakur, who happens to be Narada Muni, who is more of a Narayan Bhakta, usually, when he saw how the goddess of fortune defeated, and her servants defeated Lord Jagannath's servants, then Shivas Thakur, he thought this was great. And Swarup Damodar, just immediately before this happened, Swarup Damodar had been giving a beautiful description of Vrindavan and how Krishna relates with, particularly with the gopis. But when the goddess of fortune came, and in a very flamboyant and dramatic way, beat up the associates of Jagannath, then Shivas Thakur, he said, "Just see my goddess of fortune. Look at your inhabitants of Vrindavan," he tells Swarup Damodar. "Your inhabitants of Vrindavan, what is their opulence? A few leaves, a few twigs, and flowers. All they do is churn some yogurt. But look at my goddess of fortune. She is sitting on a throne made of jewels." So Shivas Thakur, he's in this Aishwarya mood in a big way. And Lord Chaitanya laughs and tells Shrivas, "You sound just like Narada Muni," which is because he is Narada Muni, of course. And then Lord Chaitanya tells Swarup Damodar, "Just explain something about the opulence of Vrindavan to this man." So Swarup Damodar gives very nice description. Actually, basically, he paraphrases this verse 29. And he also paraphrases text 56, which is a very special verse, very wonderful verse. "I worship that transcendental seat known as Swetadweep, where as loving consorts, the Lakshmis, in their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem. All water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance," and so on. So Swarup Damodar, he describes like this, and he goes on to make the point that your goddess of fortune, she may be seated on a throne made of jewels, but in Goloka Vrindavan, everything is jewels. The ground is jewels. There's nothing but jewels. And not only are they jewels, but they're wish-fulfilling jewels. And every tree, because it's not like that in Vaikuntha. Exactly. It's not the same in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, the ground is not Chintamani. Only in Goloka. In Vaikuntha, the trees are not all wish-fulfilling trees. They may be great devotees, but they're not wish-fulfilling trees. So, in this way, Swarup Damodar, he makes his point and defeats Shrivas. And Shrivas, being a very nice devotee, when he's defeated, he doesn't get uptight. He becomes ecstatic. And he starts clapping and jumping and laughing. And he makes a funny noise by slapping his arms like that. I don't know if anyone could demonstrate, but if you know what I mean. And in this way, it's all very ecstatic. So Goloka Vrindavan is like that. I thought I could just read, seeing there's talk about the trees, I thought I could just read a few verses about the trees. These verses are from Vrindavan Mahima Amrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati. They're very nice. There's one volume in which he talks a lot about the trees. One chapter. Because Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was asked actually about the trees here. In this Vrindavan where we are. The trees we see. Not the apricot trees. But the trees we actually see. And Prabhupada was asked, are they all wish-fulfilling? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then the devotee asked, well, what about these thorn trees? These thorn trees are not indigenous. I was told they're called angres. Is it? And that's what I was taught, that the bridge buses, some of them call them angres trees, English trees. Or for... How do you pronounce it? Angrage trees. Because they were introduced for like fencing purposes, I think. Yeah, so Prabhupada was asked, well, what about these thorn trees? You know, they're not like this tree down at Kaliagat. We can imagine how that might well be a wishful filling tree because it's very old. As far as we know, it's actually the original tree. Because Chaitanya Charitamrita says that when Lord Chaitanya came, he saw the tree and it was the original tree. So now that was 500 years ago. And that tree down there looks like it's more than 500, could be more than 500 years old. So it may well be the original tree. So we can understand how that could be a wish-fulfilling tree. But what about one of these rather sort of crummy thorn trees? Which are not very exciting. And Prabhupada said, yes, well, they must be. So they're all wish-fulfilling trees. Anyway, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, the regal trees in Vrindavan forest assume many different forms. Some assume forms of the sweetest nectar. Others take the forms of splendid, transcendental milk and cream. Others forms of intoxicating liquors. Others forms of crystal. And others forms of very cooling camphor. In Vrindavan forest, some of the trees are more splendid than millions of blazing midday suns. Some more brilliant than millions of Kalpa Agni fires which burn at the time of cosmic dissolution. Some are more charming than a great flood of splendid, cooling moonlight. Some more splendid than red gunja berries. Some more clear and splendid than millions of brilliant crystals. Some charmingly decorated with splendid new shoots. Some splendid as a limitless flood of molten gold. Some splendid as diamond necklaces. Some splendid as flocks of parrots. Some splendid as black mascara. And some splendid as roses. May Vrindavan forest be eternally manifest in this way before me. Well, he, of course, is on another level altogether. But at least we can try and appreciate a little bit in these terms the transcendental Vrindavan. Because Lord Brahma is having his realization here. Even though he's not pure, he still has material desire. And he still has to follow sadhana. And that sadhana, we'll read about it at the end of Brahmasmita. It's basically the same thing that Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. You do your duty. Your duty in terms of your conditioned nature. Arjuna, his body and mind were physical body, physical mind, material mind, you could say. They were those of a kshatriya. In the case of Lord Brahma, he has this seminal nature, this rajasic, passionate nature to create and control. So he's going to engage in that way, do his duty for Krishna like that. But still he's getting this realization. Very amazing. So we'll carry on with more about these things tomorrow. Any comments or questions? Well, we just read, she's bringing our attention to the fact that on page 50, five lines or so down in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Brahma is seeing in his ecstatic trance of pure devotion. We just read how he's in a mixed condition, and at the end we'll see how Krishna, you know, very clearly talks to him about his mixed condition. You know, the thing is, though, that we did read in one of the purports about this predilection. Do you remember that? That even though there's a type of a mixture. Which verse was that? Gosh, I can't remember. Yeah. Page 44, towards the end of the purport. True devotion is unalloyed devotional activity, free from all mundane desire. The devotion of Brahma, etc., is not unmixed devotion, but there is a stage of unmixed predilection, even in devotion for the attainment of one's selfish desire. So there is this factor of favorability which can be considered like essentially pure. Even in someone, you know, it's like in a sense, Krishna says, mam chiyo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate. If you engage in full devotional service, you don't fall down under any circumstances, then you're considered to be on the level of Brahman. Immediately, at once transcends, Krishna says, and comes to the level of Brahman. So even though there's like residual kind of contamination there, but the person is engaging in full devotional service and is not falling down. Yeah. In other words, they're strict sadhakas. Even though, you know, there's bad habits and you know, the mind is occasionally presenting ideas of other things. But they are strictly following the sadhana. And when the mind says, well, why don't we do something else? You know, why don't we gratify our senses for a change? But the strict sadhaka says no. So that is considered pure devotional service. And the way that is being described here is that there is a stage of unmixed predilection, even in devotion for the attainment of one's selfish desire. Yeah, it's like that. That the sadhaka, even though there's residual contamination, if the sadhaka remains firmly fixed and doesn't fall down, always engaging in devotional service, always chanting, always hearing about Krishna, and not getting dragged down, then even that sadhana bhakti can be considered pure devotional service. You know, Prabhupada was asked once, it's there in the, I think, the Conversations books. Someone asks Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are there in ISKCON? Prabhupada asks one devotee, how many devotees do we have now in ISKCON? And at the time there was only some few hundred. So the devotee said, oh, you know, maybe 300. Prabhupada turned back to the person who asked, said, "Oh, we have 300 pure devotees in ISKCON." So it's something like that. It's definitely something like that. Yeah. Brahma was very absorbed, very absorbed. But still there's this residual contamination. And you know, when it comes to setting up his program, Krishna sets up a program which takes into consideration the fact that there is this residual contamination. He's probably somewhere around Nishta Ruchi. You know, Asakti is the highest level in Sadhana Bhakti. Yeah, Sadhana Bhakti finishes with Asakti, and on the level of Bhava, it's no longer Sadhana Bhakti. So, you know, perhaps he's... See, he has been given some idea that he's the eternal maidservant. Prabhupada in... Is it Narada Bhakti Sutras? If I'm not mistaken. He says that on the level of Asakti, a devotee gets the revelation. They get some idea what is their eternal relationship. And then on the level of Bhava, it becomes clear. But they only enter it on the level of Prema. So perhaps Brahma is around somewhere around Asakti, something like that. Yeah. Of course, we don't want to get too linear about it. You know, there's a great tendency, you know, to start talking about, you know, this level, that level, everything becomes, you know, everyone and can be understood in terms of these levels, but it's not so simple. It's really not so simple. A possibility, it's an interesting suggestion, that as Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was put under the influence of the material energy, apparently by Krishna, for a certain purpose, so maybe Lord Brahma, in terms of his service to create, plus, on the other hand, give these amazing revelations, then maybe his passionate nature is something which has just been imparted by the will of the Lord. That's a possibility. You know, the way it's been described doesn't sound like it's exactly like that, but it's an interesting possibility because, you know, Lord Brahma is not such a simple character that we can just say, you know, he's on the level of Asakti here. He's not such a simple character. And, you know, where there's discussion... Anyway, you know, where there's discussion about Lord Brahma, where Prabhupada discusses Lord Brahma and the fact that there have been different incidents occurring with Lord Brahma, then you can see that Srila Prabhupada is very careful not to, you know, like bring Brahma down to our level and say, well, here we have Brahma getting into Maya, something like that. Anyway, that's an interesting consideration, interesting thought. Yeah. That's possible. Of course, there are different types of Lord Brahmas. And in this case, Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam refers to this Lord Brahma going through his experience with his daughter and saying that at that point, Brahma had not heard the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. So they're definitely, you know, there's definitely the possibility of considering Brahma, you know, as sort of coming up also in devotional service. Okay, we'll end here. And for tomorrow, well, I don't know if you read over the other verses here, 29, 30, and 31. If not, then you can. And we'll continue discussing them tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So everyone's got their yantra together there. Today, text 29 and 30 and 31 a bit, but mainly 29. Let us go back. Let's go to 30. Perhaps we can recite 30 responsively. Venom.